Justice Pfeiffer has been delayed, but he will be here soon, we hope. The first case is 09-481, Citizens Advocating Responsible Energy versus the Ohio Power Siting Board. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Tom Lee. I represent Citizens Advocating Responsible Energy. Acronym is CARE, and the CARE is the appellant in this case. With me on the brief and a counsel table is Julie Crocker. Your Honor, we'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Your Honor, the order below, which issued a certificate of public need, was the culmination of a process involving a wholesale disregard of appellant's rights. The process was flawed from the outset with the filing of critical, important evidentiary documents under seal, documents which remain under seal today, to the final decision adopted by the board, which was a decision that was actually made by the administrative law judge below. The final evidence in this case was submitted October 1, 2008. Nothing occurred between then and November 24, 2008, which is the very first day that the board met to consider this case in any way whatsoever. When the board sat down to meet on November 24, 2008, it had before it a 50-page opinion that came from an unknown source. Within minutes of convening that meeting, the board adopted, without discussion, without debate, without any consideration, adopted that opinion.
When you say an unknown source, do you mean truly unknown?
Your Honor, we believe...
Surely you got a report that had some author's signature on it.
The signature on the bottom of the document were the members of the board. Your Honor, in other words, the document appeared. This is an order of the board. It had signature lines on it. We don't know who prepared that document. We know no members of the board were at the evidentiary hearing. We know no members of the board were able to review the credibility of witnesses who testified at the hearing. But yet there was an order that was adopted by the board without discussion or comment as soon as the board convened on this matter. Your Honor, the process here is of constitutional import.
And you don't think that, like we do here, where we get master commissioner memos or law clerk memos, you don't think that that board got that document beforehand and had a chance to study it and read it, that they just sat on that bench and took a 50-page document, signed their name to it? Is that what you're alleging they did?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what we believe happened, and that's what we believe the record demonstrates. Okay. The fact is, at the end of this process, we filed an application for rehearing. And in that application for rehearing, we said to the board, you did not do your job. You are supposed to have an independent analysis of this. The statute specifically requires that the authority of the board shall not be exercised, and I quote, by any officer, employee, or body other than the board itself.
Do you have evidence that the board members did not read the report or talk to the staff members in preparing the report? Is there evidence of that?
Well, no, Your Honor. You can never prove a negative when
How can you allege then a due process violation if you don't have any evidence that there was an improper procedure at the board?
Your Honor, the evidence of an improper procedure comes from the application for rehearing. When we accuse the board of not doing its job, of not reading, the board's response was not, we did read it. We read the record, we evaluated it separately. Even though we weren't present, we had something that we looked at and we made an independent determination. What the board said, and I quote from the application, the denial of the application for reconsideration was, just because a proposed order is prepared by an ALJ does not mean it is not read and closely considered by each board member. Your Honors, a response of you can't prove I didn't read it to an accusation that you didn't read it is tantamount to an admission.
Counsel, what is your evidence that they didn't read it?
That would be the best evidence of it, Your Honor.
The fact that they said in their response, their statements in their response is your best evidence that they didn't read it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that extrapolating quite a bit from those sentences?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
All right, well, let me back up to your first statements. Is there a dispute that there's a public need here?
There is a dispute that there's a public need for putting the line in the specific location.
Is there a dispute that there is a need for a public line for the expansion of the substation for the provision of services?
There is not a dispute that there is a public need for a change. The dispute is over where that power line should go.
And my understanding is that there are three locations or three, that there's a system that is in place, and they attribute values to certain components within the land that is being considered. Removal of a house, purchase of property, free space, maybe other utilities. There's just a myriad of factors that are taken into consideration, and each one is allocated a point or a weight, and then there is a standard analysis that is performed, and that is how the decision on the siting is made. Is that roughly the, am I correct here?
Almost, Your Honor. That is how the decision is made by the utility, but the scoring system, the point system, all of that is something that the utility adopted, not something that's mandated by a statute or by regulation or that appears anywhere else.
But it's a reasonable way of approaching the siting.
It is one way of approaching the siting, although we did challenge some of the scoring mechanisms below.
But it's been used repeatedly, that type of a scoring system, in order to present the evidence for the reasonableness of the siting?
Not this particular scoring system that I'm aware of. We are aware that for a similar project, they used a different scoring system, resulting in a different route in 1995.
For the same need?
For the same
public need.
The exact same public
need. And that was not accomplished at that point?
That was certified, that route was certified, and First Energy, 4 years after receiving the certificate, determined that it would not need that route or would not need that power, which is the same we're talking about here, until sometime in the 2020 or 2030.
Okay. So were there any changes in the intervening years as far as the... Are you disputing that there was not a need to to identify another route?
Yes, Your Honor. One of the key components of the evidence that CARE presented to the administrative law judge was that this previous route that had been mm-hmm. approved was actually superior to the route that ultimately was certified. And the reasons for that related to the nature of the route and the amount of public property that was going to be used for that versus private property. One of the things in the scoring system that we objected to was the presumption by First Energy that it is always preferable to use private property to build this line for a public need rather than use public property.
Is that issue before us today? Because I read the propositions of law, it really deals with delegation of authority. And it deals with not providing enough time to have a proper hearing. So these sub-issues, are they before this court?
You're correct, Your Honor. Our challenge here is not based upon the substance of the decision. Our challenge is based upon, number one, the fact that this decision, which is mandated to be made by the board, that the evidence we believe is clear that it was not made by the board, that it was in fact made by the administrative law judge. Justice O'Connor, you're correct. We cannot prove that a public official does not do their job. Proving that negative is almost impossible, but I would suggest to this court that the record here screams out that that's exactly what happened.
Mr. Lee, help me to understand, in the rehearing memo that was prepared by the siting board, it's suggested by them that the procedure that they followed in adopting the report was mandated by Revised Code Section 490607, and they further suggest that it was introduced into evidence and presented in the testimony of James Odell, who was employed as a siting specialist. So I think what the siting board was suggesting was that this wasn't anything, as you had presented to us, simply delivered to them and signed. It had been the subject of work and testimony at the hearing. Can you help me relate what the siting board's conclusions are and your argument?
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure what the siting board is trying to get to there. The 490607-16 is the procedure by which is typical with all other hearing boards that this court considers. There is a report of the hearing officer made to the board with a recommendation. When that occurs, the parties are given, before there's any decision made, the parties are given a chance, like you would be with a magistrate's report or referee's report in court, the parties are given a chance to say, we believe that the hearing officer misevaluated the evidence. Here, there's no such report. Here, a report appeared. There's no process for this. There's no rule for this. There's no way that it's done. The hearing officer made the decision before the board ever met. The board can't decide what is going to happen here. The board can decide it, but it can't decide it without meeting. It has to meet. It has to vote. It has to decide on it. And before that ever occurred, the decision was written. And we believe that shows that this important decision, which the statute specifically says cannot be made by the board, or cannot be made by anyone other than the board, was in fact made by the ALJ. And Your Honors, this process was flawed from the start. We have a number of documents. The critical information upon which applicants rely to prove their need is technical, highly technical engineering information. Such things as load flow levels, voltage levels, power factors, those are all filed with the application and with documents on the application. There were three things that occurred with three separate challenges that we made trying to get those documents out from under seal, and more importantly, trying to get those documents for 15 weeks. We did not get those documents for 15 weeks. The first claim was a trade secret claim that was later abandoned in favor of the FERC 630, which is a federal statute. The FERC 630 requires proof that this could be used for terrorist activity. That proof does not exist in the record. And at the end of the day, the administrative law judge simply said that anything that is detailed level engineering is automatically sealed here. She said that at the adjudicatory hearing on September 16. So we have information that is key evidence in the case that we are not allowed to see, that the public is not allowed to see, simply because it's engineering information. And there's been no demonstration that this engineering information would create a benefit to any of the competitors, particularly in a situation where you have a monopolistic kind of activity.
What would the engineering information lead to in terms of your case, to demonstrate that it's just not necessary altogether, or that the alternative routes that you suggest would be a better choice?
Justice Pfeiffer, the first thing is to evaluate whether or not there's a need for this line as proposed, and the second thing is to determine from our experts what other possibilities exist that do not involve cutting a swath through 15 miles of farmland. Are there ways to address this need from a technical standpoint that can be done using public rights of way or other public lands? And that information, to make those determinations from an engineering standpoint, it's critical to have the load data and the other data. So, Your Honors, to sum up, we believe that the decision.
Well, counsel, did the need change from the mid 90s when it was when a different route was identified? You mentioned that previously there was a route that was, I guess, more acceptable to your clients, and that obviously had to have been approved because there was a need. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Did the need lessen over the last 15 years?
No, Your Honor.
So the question about the need and the requirement for the data that you're complaining about is really irrelevant, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, not at all. First off, in 1995, they obtained a certificate of need based upon a need. In 1999, the applicants withdrew their certificate of need and informed the Public Utilities Commission that this need could be met by other implemented technology through 2027 to 2035. So the utility is on record representing to the Public Utilities Commission that this need can be met by other technologies. That representation in the record is a 1999 representation, and that's the question about what has happened between 1999 and the current time, and that was what we evaluated.
Mr. Lee, I have a question on the second proposition with respect to the timing or the amount of time that you had to prepare for the hearing. And I note that there was a motion that you filed in August to continue for 4 weeks. You obtained only 2 weeks for the hearing, but was there any objection registered at the time that you had only received 2 weeks as opposed to the 4 weeks you requested?
Yes, Your Honor, we raised that objection at the commencement of the hearing. We also moved to unseal the documents that had been held confidential by the administrative law judge, again, at that point we had been attempting to get enough information. Our position is simply this: number one, we had not received the documents, and we're talking about not only documents that are evidence in the record against appellants, once they were parties to the case, that they were not allowed to see until 3 weeks before the discovery closed. But
will the record, though, show that you objected to only having 2 weeks as opposed to 4 weeks? That was my question.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it does. At the hearing on the 16th. Your Honor, my time has expired, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you.
Mr. Lindgren.
May it please the court, my name is Thomas Lindgren, and I'm representing the Ohio Power Siting Board. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for Mr. Schmidt, the counsel for the intervening appellees and applicants in this case. Your Honors, the board has fully performed its duty in this case. It has determined that the new transmission line is necessary and that it meets all of the statutory criteria. It has approved construction of the line subject to 43 conditions intended to mitigate the impact of construction. While it is impossible to eliminate all negative effects from construction of a new line, it is important to remember that no one's home will be taken as a result of the construction of this line.
Counsel, did the Power Siting Board actually have a meeting in which there was face-to-face discussion about this choice?
Yes, Your Honor, this order and certificate were approved in a public meeting of the board. This meeting was duly noticed, and this case was placed on its agenda. There was some discussion of the order, and the order was voted upon and unanimously approved at that meeting.
I noticed that Director Boggs did not sign it. Was he just not present, or opposed?
I believe he was not there that day, but all of the board members or their delegates who were in attendance did vote for it and sign the order.
I don't know if this, I don't think this supposed error was preserved here, but the statute requires the board to set forth the reasons prompting the decisions arrived at. Not very good grammar, but that's what it says. That really didn't happen here, did it? The board was very summary, wasn't it, in its conclusions?
Your Honor, the board's order was approximately 50 pages long. There was a great deal of discussion in that order about the...
But that was the ALJ's recommended order, was it not? That wasn't the final conclusion by the board, was it?
Your Honor, that was the order that was signed by the board. It does contain detailed discussion of the nature of the project, the impact of the project, and all of the conditions that were being attached to this line.
Well, counsel, and Justice O'Connor's questions about the alternative that was available earlier on, apparently we don't have an opportunity to get at that, but in the overall look at this, is it clear that due consideration was given to the fact that Geauga County is one of the most idyllic places in this state, and that a transmission line should be located to the extent possible in a fashion that would do the least damage to that aspect of Geauga County. We don't have many places like it. It's like Vermont on a good day. Is there considerable evidence that those factors were given enough consideration when this was finally decided?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The board staff did evaluate the impact of the construction of this line on the environment. There was detailed discussion of this in the staff report that was introduced as evidence. The board did discuss the environmental impact of the project in its order, and in fact, the board did impose 43 separate conditions on construction intended to mitigate the impact of this construction.
Mr. Lindgren, let me ask it a different way. You know, when you talk about a public hearing, I think the general thought is there's going to be individuals there who are listening to what the board has to say. And in this particular situation, I understand the report itself included all these findings. It had the reasons, it had everything that justifies what the conclusion was. The question is that discussed in the public meeting, or was it merely a rubber stamping of the report after the case was called?
Your Honor, perhaps I should explain the procedure in this case. The procedure has a public adjudicatory proceeding, and there all of the parties had an opportunity to present witnesses and introduce exhibits. The appellants in this case did present testimony. The board staff did testify and introduce their staff report. There were also three local public hearings held in Geauga County where residents of the county had an opportunity to voice their opinions, either pro or con, about the project. After all of these hearings occurred, then the board did consider an order in its public meeting and voted to approve that order and issue the certificate for construction of this line.
And was the order given to all the parties? You said CARE was an intervener, so they had the order ahead of time?
No, Your Honor. There's no requirement in any statute or rule that this draft order be provided to the intervening parties ahead of time. However, after the order was issued by the board, then all of the parties had an opportunity to apply for rehearing.
And so the statutory requirement of giving the parties the order, you're saying, happens after the order is actually approved?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Is that done pursuant to 490607?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that says the chairman of the board shall cause the application to be investigated and shall not less than 15 days prior to the date of the application is set for hearing submit a written report to the board and the applicant. Was that done?
Yes, I believe the record shows that was done, Your Honor.
And then further says that the report shall set forth the nature of the investigation and contain recommended findings with regard to 490610 and become part of the record. And is that what the siting board signed? Is that the report they signed?
No, Your Honor. I believe that refers to the staff report that was done after the staff's investigation of the project. And that was introduced as evidence at the adjudicatory hearing, and the board was entitled to rely on that report in its opinion and order. So that's a separate document from the board's order.
So there were two sessions of the siting board, the adjudicatory session, and then the final session when they approved the recommendation.
There was an adjudicatory hearing that was presided over by the administrative law judge. Then there was a public meeting of the board where they voted to approve the opinion in order.
And then a generous interpretation of what Mr. Lee is arguing is that the board can't delegate its authority to that administrative law judge. What's your response to that position?
Well, Your Honor, the statute permits the chairman to assign duties to members of the PUCO staff, and here he chose to assign the duty to preside over the hearing and draft an order to a member of the PUCO's legal department. The only limitation on that delegation is that the board itself must make the ultimate decision to grant or deny the certificate. And here it was the board that made that ultimate decision. As one of the justices noted, this is very similar to a court's use of a master commissioner or a law clerk to draft an order. In either case, it's the tribunal that makes the ultimate decision.
Counsel, there's one of the assignments of error discusses the continuance issue, and I believe your briefs maintain that there was no objection to the two-week continuance, yet counsel has indicated that there was some sort of apparent verbal objection at the final hearing. Can you give me your opinion on whether that occurred or not, or whether we would find that in the record?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it wasn't until the hearing that counsel for the appellants argued for more time. I would point out that the board enjoys considerable discretion in controlling its docket, and much like a trial court, it needs to balance the needs of litigants to have time to prepare for a case and the need to move its docket along. Here, the appellants were granted approximately half the time they had asked for. Also, I'd point out that they had full access to all of these records that they're arguing about prior to that hearing. So they were not harmed by the fact that certain records, a very small portion of the discovery provided to them, were placed under seal.
So, sir, are you saying that it was this, that they did not object after they were given 2 weeks instead of 4 weeks? Is that the position that you have with respect to the record? I know you're saying that they raised the issue of continuance, and then they were given 2 weeks as opposed to four, but my question is, does the record show that there was an objection once they didn't get the full time they asked for?
Your Honor, I don't believe there was a written objection or any interlocutory appeal that they could have filed.
But there could have been an oral objection on the record, as Mr. Lee has said?
Yes, there could have been.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, what will this transmission line look like when completed? What would one see out there?
Your Honor, if this line is built, you will see a row of single wooden poles through the countryside with a wire strung along them. It really won't look much different from the lines you might see along a residential street. I believe it'll be a little bit higher, but there will just be a single line of wooden poles. We're not talking about these enormous.
But a 60-foot right of way, does that mean you're going to clear cut a 60-foot swath across Geauga County?
Your Honor, I believe the conditions placed on the line limit the ability to cut vegetation to that which would potentially interfere with the transmission lines. They can't eliminate all vegetation in these areas. And in fact, those members of CARE who have farms around this area will still be able to use the area for farming.
Okay. And this is all the stuff that we can't reach, but going back to your discussion or the discussion earlier with Justice O'Connor, where an earlier route was along a state highway. If you had a route like that, you wouldn't hardly even notice what you're talking about, would you? Because there are already existing utility poles along most of the state highways.
Well, Your Honor, first I would like to point out that these other potential routes were not raised were not applied for on the application, and the board is not free to just pick any other route. It has to determine whether the routes proposed by the applicants met the statutory criteria or did not. But the board did consider those other potential routes and found that none of them was more advantageous than the routes proposed by the applicants.
And by advantageous, what are they determining there? Cost to build the project or?
Your Honor, they look at the economic feasibility of the project and also the impact of construction. Now, the line the appellants primarily focus on would be that along an abandoned railroad route. Now, the fact is that this route has been converted into a bike path by the Geauga County Park District, and they have invested several million dollars in upgrading this project. So there's been a great deal of change between 1995 and the present. And there was testimony at the adjudicatory hearing that construction of this route would negatively impact that bike path.
So you couldn't have telephone poles or electric poles running along a bike path. That would be ugly, but running it across the
Your Honor, that might be
fields wouldn't be.
That might be technically feasible, but the board found that it was appropriate to place this construction line on the applicant's preferred route, which was primarily a cross-country route. As a result of this route, no one's home was going to be taken. That was a significant factor in their decision.
Well, nobody's home would be taken if you went down the bike path either. But we don't have that in front of us, so.
No. That's correct, Your Honor. Your Honors, I see my time is up. Your Honors, the board's order is lawful, is supported by the evidence, and should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindgren. Mr. Schmidt. You've been left with less than 2 minutes, but I'll give you an extra minute.
Thank you. Chief Justice Moyer, members of the court, my name is Robert Schmidt. I'm with Christopher Schraff. I represent the intervener appellees in this matter, American Transmission System, Inc., and the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company. I think what I would like to do is take a moment to address some of Justice Pfeiffer's concerns about the route selection process and talk a little bit about the history and the other routes that were considered in this matter. The route selection process that was used in this particular case was one of the most comprehensive ever undertaken by my clients or their consultant. The reason for that was because we knew that Geauga County was special. Now, in the process of conducting this route selection study, we evaluated over 900 separate routes, coming to the conclusion that the preferred route was the best one that minimized the overall impacts from the construction of this transmission line. Four separate routes were proposed by CARE throughout the course of these proceedings. The Rachel route, which was the one that was approved back in the mid-90s, was evaluated during this route selection process. It ranked 189th of the routes of the 900 that were considered. To compare that, the alternate route in this case was the number one in the route selection process, and the preferred route that we ultimately selected was 15th. We selected the 15th because it was a cross-country route and had the fewest impacts on people's homes. That was the consideration that led to the selection of the preferred route. Now, the other routes that were proposed by CARE during these proceedings, including routes along 322, for those of you that know the area, that's Mayfield Road. When we evaluated that route using the same methodology that we used for all the other routes that were considered, that route ranked dead last, 894 of 894, because of the conditions associated with construction along a road that has, among other things, cemeteries and historic buildings and that type of consideration. The other routes scored equally bad. And what happened during the course of these proceedings is that we responded to each and every one of these routes by conducting an analysis that was consistent with the route selection process we used to find our preferred route.
The board's order does not provide that detailed analysis, does it? It's 50 pages, and it's hard to find it here. Do you agree with that, or do you think the board analyze it pursuant to the statute the way it should?
I do believe the board considered each of the proposed routes that was put forward by CARE in its order, and I believe that the board properly conducted its analysis in accordance with its statutory mandate. The statutory requirement is that we provide two routes and a description of the process that we used to develop those two routes as the preferred and alternate route. That was accomplished in the application. And as I said, the detail that was provided in this application based upon the route selection study was one of the most comprehensive that has been done for a power line in Ohio.
Counselor, did your client have a copy of the proposed order before the board met?
No, sir.
So you saw it for the first time when the board met as well?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does that comply with the statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I thought when Justice O'Donnell read that part of it, it said something about the petitioner or the moving party getting an advanced copy as well.
I think there are a couple things, a couple procedural steps that need to be clarified, perhaps. What I think Justice O'Donnell was talking about was the preparation of a staff report that is done to investigate an application. That staff report is prepared by the staff at the direction of the chairman, and it's submitted into the record. James O'Dell, as the citing expert, was the one who sponsored that report into the record. What the board issued was an order that basically approved a certificate for the construction of this particular transmission line on a preferred route. Then, following that procedural step of the issuance of this order, which those 50 pages and summarized many of the arguments made below and the evidence, the parties are given an opportunity to apply for rehearing based upon that order. So in other words, they do get an opportunity to review and object to the order, and that's the purpose of the statutory mandate for filing an application for rehearing.
You need to sum up, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Lee, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I might clear up the one issue for Justice O'Donnell, the first time any of the parties saw the opinion of the board was not when it was given, it was after it was given. Sometime later that night it became posted. No one saw anything beforehand. No one had a chance to object to it before it became the ruling of the board.
According to Mr. Schmidt's argument, however, the opportunity that you have to object to the report then would be at the rehearing, which you had that opportunity. Do you agree with his analysis of how that statutory framework works?
I do not, Your Honor. The rehearing process is basically, it's a statutorily mandated process. Filing an application for rehearing is a jurisdictional prerequisite to filing an appeal to the Supreme Court. And as you know, this board has direct appeal to the Supreme Court. That really is the first chance to appeal an order. And the chance for objecting to the report before the rehearing, before the order is adopted, so that these people from all kinds of different departments that are assembled by the legislature to take a diverse group of views and then collectively come up with the wisdom about whether or not there's a public need for that, can use their individual and meld their individual expertises to decide that. That didn't happen. The report was issued, or the order was issued, with no input from the parties.
Did you have input before the administrative law judge? Did you present testimony and witnesses there?
Yes, Your Honor, we did have input before the administrative law judge.
So you did have a chance to comment, you did have a chance to object, you did have a chance to present your version of what route you preferred at that stage.
We did, Your Honor, although we had very limited discovery. You heard Mr. Schmidt talk about the 900 routes and the exhaustive analysis. We had 3 weeks with the documents, not only to analyze the documents, which requires experts, but also to do all of our discovery. That is unreasonable and it is unlawful.
Counsel, is the process that was employed here, the report, the hearing by the administrative law judge, the presentation of the order for signature, and then the reconsideration motion, is that the same process that is employed routinely, not just in your case, but for all other citing cases that come before this body?
Your Honor, I'm not an expert in this, and as the court probably knows, the last time this body was before this court was on a substantive matter was 1995. The website for the Ohio Power Siting Board says that at the conclusion of the adjudicatory hearing, there will be a report issued by the ALJ. And the regulations say that the parties are then given a chance to file objections. That report is a recommendation to the board, as well as findings of fact and conclusions of law, as would be typical with any hearing officer. That did not happen here. There was no...
What I'm trying to determine is whether they went out of their way to change up the process in your case as opposed to the process that is employed in other cases dealing with siting.
Your Honor, I'm not an expert on the Power Siting Board. My understanding is that over time, this process changed from the report and recommendation, objections being filed, to simply the report being given to the board and the board approving it.
Mr. Lee, did you get a copy of the staff report in advance of the hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. We did have the staff report. We had a chance to uh, to deal with that, although also, again, we have a compressed time frame here
yes.
to analyze the staff report because we don't have the key engineering documents or engineering information beforehand. Your Honor,
Mr. Lee.
To reverse and remand for a new hearing. Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.